It's time for Windows Weekly. We sent Paul Thurrott on assignment. Tough one, too. He went to Maui for the Qualcomm Snapdragon, the Tech Summit. He's there right now and will be joined on this show by Don McGuire. He's the head of marketing at Qualcomm. And Ryan Shrout from PC Perspective. And, of course, Mary Jo Foley. We're all going to talk about the brand new Windows on ARM laptops announced today and the new Snapdragon 845 processor. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 547, recorded Wednesday, December 6th, 2017. Windows on ARM. Windows Weekly is literally brought to you by Sonic, TWiT's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Visit sonic.com/TWiT to sign up for service and receive your first month free. And by WordPress. Plans start at just $4 a month. Find out why 29% of all the web runs on WordPress. Get your brand new website today at wordpress.com/windows and save 15%. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. Oh boy, it's time for Windows Weekly in a very special edition. For those of you tuning in live, we're starting a little later because Paul's on Hawaii time. What a lucky dog. Big announcements this week. Joining us, of course, as always, Mary Jo Foley. She's in Manhattan, all about Microsoft.com. And Paul Thurrott, he is in Maui.
Yep, the land of the midday sun.
Wow.
It's not terrible here.
What brings you to Maui?
So Qualcomm is having their Snapdragon Tech Summit here this year. Last year it was in sunny downtown New York City. this year it's in a slightly nicer place. No offense, Mary Jo. I like New York too. But obviously they've got lots of partners and also, you know, the press from various parts of the world, Asia, Pacific, as well as Europe and the United States, North America. So centrally located, maybe.
It doesn't hurt that it's a tropical paradise.
I know.
It does not hurt.
Yep. So today
I saw them say, is this true? They said it's the biggest gathering of tech press ever?
Wireless tech press. No. Outside of Mobile World Congress.
Yeah, that's pretty huge, though, to say that, right?
That was an interesting comment. There's only about 300 tech press here. So this is not like something on the order of, like Tech Ed or whatever, whatever we're calling it
CES.
This year. Yeah. No, but for the mobile world, like actually that's really big, right? For specifically mobile. So, obviously Mobile World Congress is the big one. Remember, this is for a single company, and obviously it's for a key company in that ecosystem, but it's a big deal on that note for sure.
So, how do you want to go with this? I know you have guests.
Yeah, so we're going to bring out two guests. We should start with the news because we are not quite ready with the guests.
Yeah, but no, that's good. We'll start with the news. We'll do a break, and then we'll get the guests in there. This is actually called the Qualcomm Capnap. This is the Qualcomm Snapdragon Tech Summit, and that's they great. Did announce the 845, but I think they got scooped just a little teeny weeny bit by Microsoft, which announced that finally WOA is here, Windows on ARM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they did that announcement here, right? And so there are 3 days of keynotes, so 3 days of announcements. There'll be a third day tomorrow, which will focus on the 5G stuff and some of the other initiatives they're working on. But the big news today was the 845, which is obviously the next generation mobile processor. And the big news yesterday, at least from my perspective, there was more to it than this, but from all of our perspectives at Windows Weekly, was the announcement of the first Snapdragon-based Windows 10 PCs.
So who are the manufacturers? And when do we get them and how much?
Yeah. You may recall a little bit of rumor or news, as we might have called it, in December 2016, that the first ARM-based PCs would arrive in December 2017. And so we've announced them, but they're not actually shipping now. So the two that we know about are the HP Elite X2. And HP, by the way, sells an Elite X2 today that's based on Intel chipsets and so forth. And I'm sure they're going to update that, probably announce it at CES, and it will look like the version that they showed off here. But the one they showed off here is thinner and lighter and gets better battery life, and it's based on Qualcomm chipsets. And also an Asus device as well. We know that Lenovo is going to announce something next month at CES. We know that other PC manufacturers have said that they're on board with this initiative, so we can expect to see those devices probably at CES, right? I think that would be the obvious time frame for those announcements. We've got Don McGuire coming out later from Qualcomm, and I have some questions. I have some questions in general. I have some questions for him sort of in the wake of this announcement, right? Because in some ways, there were a couple of surprises. one of them has to do with the timing, right? So here we are at the end of 2017. We've announced Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 processor-based PCs. They've announced an 845, right? And so how does that work? And also the fact that these devices run Windows 10S exclusively, at least so far, which was a surprise to me, because I feel like
that's disappointing.
There's two sides to that.
Upgradable to Windows 10 Pro.
For a fee, for $50, or for free?
For free for a limited time. And in Asus's materials, they said till September 2018, which is longer than what Microsoft has said.
So this is kind of like the Surface laptop then. This is...
Yeah, but I think that's fair.
Is there a reason why Windows 10S for these ARM devices?
Well, see, that's we're going to ask that question because I'm a little confused. But I would say, you know, when you think about the future of the PC and you look at it from Microsoft's perspective, from like sort of a platform perspective, there are two big initiatives and three if you want to divide the second one into two parts. The first is Windows 10S, right, which is the simpler non-legacy version of Windows 10, smart. But not necessarily ready right, you know, today for everybody. There's the Always Connected PC initiative, which brings always on connectivity, better battery life, instant on, and so forth. And then you get the Qualcomm piece of it, where you get really sharp improvements in battery life and instant on performance, for example. So I sort of viewed these things as three separate things. In some ways, what we're seeing here is a combination of at least two of those. So that was a little unexpected. It's kind of interesting, but that's something we should talk to Qualcomm about.
Yeah, I think my guess is 10S is the reason they're going with 10S, or the reason they'll say they're going with 10S is for the battery, right? So they'll say, we've already shown that 10S gets longer battery life than any version of Windows 10, so that's why we put it on there.
It's also what I think of as like the reliability of that kind of thing. In other words, mm-hmm. when you limit the experience to the store apps, essentially, you have a sort of a guarantee of how those things are going to behave on the system. Whereas if you start introducing x86 apps, even on Intel, right, there's a lot of unreliability there, depending on the apps you're running. And when you add the emulation factor on Qualcomm, it's kind of an unknown. And I think a lot of us are particularly interested in testing that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think obviously what everyone's shooting for here is the best possible experience. And when you think about the way that Microsoft has marketed Windows 10S, a Qualcomm-based PC kind of fits into that very nicely because those customers, in Microsoft's eyes, value those things that are inherent to the system, you know, the reliability, mm-hmm. the battery life, and the consistency.
Will all the new hardware run on an 845, or are they going to use some? Mm-mm. No.
Nope. 835 what they've announced. Yeah.
Yeah, so that is what they've announced. Although
that's based the older Snapdragon.
Yeah, based on a comment that was said on stage today, there will be 845-based systems at some point, right? I don't know if that means 6 months or 9 months or a year or whatever, but that appears to be in the cards as well. Mm-hmm. But not right away, right? The first Genesis.
I shouldn't even say older. 835 is the current Snapdragon, mm-hmm. and 845 is the next generation, coming next generation. What are their specs? 8 gigs of RAM, 4 gigs? What kind of hardware are we going to get here?
The basic is 4 gigs. I'm sorry, go ahead, Mary Jo.
I was just going to say, the Asus one, they said 4 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of storage for $599, 8 gigs, 256 gig of storage, $799.
Yeah. And the HP didn't say.
We don't know yet, right?
I'm not sure on the existing Elite X2, but I'd be surprised if it came with less than 8. I suppose on a system where you're focusing.
I'm sorry. Is it called Elite X2? Because there's an Envy X2. Envy.
Yeah. Okay. I believe it's.
No, I wasn't sure if there were two different brands, like the Intel and the ARM.
There are. I'm screwing it up. Okay. Yeah, it's Envy X2. Sorry about that.
Envy X2. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right. I don't know for sure, but it seems like on the Envy X2, sorry, an X86, probably 8 gigs is the minimum, but they might go with 4 in this version because, again, we're kind of optimizing for battery life over everything else. Right. And the type of user that would want this machine is more concerned with that than, say, raw performance.
Do developers have to change their apps? You'd have to recompile everything for Windows on ARM. What does this mean for apps, for software?
If you're a store app, it doesn't mean anything because you get that automatically.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a checkbox. In fact, it's checked by default. And so when you create an app in the store, you know, that's a capability you get. This dates back to the Windows RT days. It's just phone as well. It's a capability that just exists in the platform. The open question here, though, is, of course, x86, you know, desktop apps that you might download from the internet, Google Chrome, iTunes, whatever. Out of the box, obviously, those things aren't going to run in Windows 10 S. If you upgrade to Pro, they will. And that's, you know, this is the thing I think a lot of people are super interested in, just to see what that looks like, you know, on ARM.
Yeah. And the the emulator to me was the thing I was surprised they actually announced and had ready yesterday because they said they were going to do that. But I was thinking because of that threat from Intel over patents that maybe they wouldn't actually have that ready as part of the bat. But it is. And they told me when I talked to them, they said, you know how we do 16-bit Windows on 64-bit Windows with Windows on Windows, you know, the WoW thing? They said, we extended that, and that's how we're going to emulate 16-bit Win32 apps on top of ARM.
Right.
And if you look at the diagrams they have, it actually says the WoW abstraction layer is there on top of the emulator. So that is how they're doing it.
But it's consistent. That's the states back literally 20 years when they made Windows NT and it was platform independent, right? And we didn't, for most of its lifespan, we've been running on Intel basically or x86. But that capability was always there. It was one of the things that made Windows RT a possibility, whatever that was, 5-6 years ago. And it's enabling this today as well. Yeah.
So, Paul,
we
have our guests.
We do have a guest.
Okay. Well, let's take a break.
Can you hear our? Are you in?
Are you in? Or are you out? All right.
All right. So
we'll take a little break, and then
we're going to grill this guy.
Yeah. We'll even tell you who this guy is, and I still think there's a lot more to say about these things. These not just the chips, but the laptop. I have questions galore, but we'll get all of those answered in just a little bit as we continue. Live from the Qualcomm Tech Summit, the Snapdragon Tech Summit going on. You know, I feel bad for Paul. He's got to be in Maui and all that, but it's okay. It's okay. Our show today brought to you by Sonic. Twit's, literally brought to you by Sonic. Twit's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. You kind of spoiled me, Sonic. Dane Jasper, our good friend, the founder of Sonic, has realized that you can bring the internet revolution at a very affordable price. You don't have to play the games these big internet service providers are playing. And now, more than ever, we need Sonic. And if you're lucky enough to be living in Northern California, you can get Sonic. We all need it, but you can get it. So the internet infrastructure, obviously, in the United States, not only is the infrastructure itself failing, so is the regulatory situation. We got too many people paying too much for, let's face it, crappy cable internet. And those companies are getting worse and worse. Enter Sonic, your white knight, your hero. They deliver fast, affordable internet and phone and TV to homes and businesses all over California for a price that is unbelievable. And they don't cap their internet. They stand up for their users. They stand up for privacy. They're everything you want an ISP to be. In fact, the Electronic Frontier Foundation gives Sonic green check marks all the way across in every single category. Sonic delivers residential and business fiber to the premise networks with gigabit connectivity in San Francisco, in the San Francisco North Bay Area, the East Bay Area. I don't want to make you jealous, but listen to what you get. 15 email accounts, a gigabyte of storage, personal web hosting, a new domain, fax line service, a home phone connection with unlimited local and long distance calling. And of course, 1,000 up to speeds of up to 1,000 megabits per second for $40 a month. If they can do it, why can't all these other guys do it? They are profitable. This is how it ought to be. And they stand up for your privacy. They don't have any bandwidth caps. You could switch from your local carrier so you could even keep your phone number. Sonic's customer advocacy is paving the way for a better state of internet access in America. And I just want to support them because they're fighting the good fight for all of us. Join the internet revolution. Visit Sonic, S-O-N-I-C, sonic.com/twit to get your first month of Sonic internet and phone service free. Plus, bundle it with Dish and save $120 on your Sonic bill. Visit sonic.com/twit to find out if they're available in your area. And if they're not, call them and say, I want it. All right. Guest audio on Skype 3. I am turning up the volume, turning up the sound. We are headed back to Hawaii, my future home. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. And Paul, let's introduce your guest.
Yeah, so this is Don McGuire, VP of Global Product Marketing for Qualcomm. He's in the hot seat today.
You need to sit farther away from him.
Here?
Oh, I do. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to help. But it's great to have you, Don. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm gonna let you lead the charge, Paul, since you're sitting there. But I take it we want to start by talking about the 845, right?
Well, actually, let's step back and start with Windows 10 and ARM, right? Because
okay, you got it.
This is, I mean, for me, you know, we've been waiting for this for a year, and it's really interesting. It kind of sitting on this for all of 2017, and then it happens, and it's like this explosion of questions, you know. I'm just curious, you know, from Qualcomm's perspective. I mean, obviously, you guys have your message around battery life advantages and so forth. I mean, what's the big opportunity here? I mean, how are we differentiating? Let's kind of dive into what you're doing on the PC, I guess.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. We've been, ever since the WinHack announcement, right, which was actually December 4th of last year, we've been on this journey with Microsoft and the ecosystem partners to bring these devices to market. And we're sort of now one step closer with the announcement of the HP and the Asus devices. And then upcoming at CES, there'll be a Lenovo event, as Cristiano teased out yesterday. So we're excited that the three first devices from three of the world's largest PC OEMs are going to be coming to market. And so that's a significant milestone and how we kind of rallied the ecosystem in a pretty short period of time to move in this direction in delivering the always connected PC value proposition that we believe in. So from that perspective, from Qualcomm's perspective, we believe the Snapdragon platform is actually really, really well suited to the convergence of what's happening with mobile compute. Smartphones getting more powerful, screens are large, you can do more compute type tasks with your smartphone, which, by the way, has since 2011 eaten into PC TAM, as we all know, right, significantly. And then the tablet came in and kind of took a little bit out of it, but then the tablet sort of has kind of fallen by the wayside and become more of a third screen entertainment sort of babysitter device. So there's been all these things happening. This has been a huge inflection point, we think, that's occurred that's made the timing of this perfect to deliver these sort of thinner, lighter, more mobile type devices with the capabilities that everybody really likes and loves about their smartphone to make computing, mobile computing, truly mobile computing. And so we think the platform aligns really well to that value proposition. And we also see growth in the segment of PC TAM, which is really the two-in-one space, right? The thin and light convertible detachable two-in-one space. That's where the mainstream growth is really happening. Desktops are declining. Even traditional notebooks are declining. And besides gaming, which is more niche, and there's growth there, it's really mainstream is growing in this sort of ultra mobile sort of on the go types of devices. And so that's where we think the sweet spot is, and that's where we're focused. And we think that we have a good chance of success there.
I mean, the big number one, I guess the number one question would be just performance, right? I mean, I think you guys, you know, you've got 20 plus hours of battery life claimed, and, you know, obviously people will test that and we'll see how these things kind of fall out. We know where Intel based PCs are. I look back at the list of PCs I had reviewed this year, and it ranges from five something to, in one extreme case, 11 hours of battery life real world. So, you know, the average is somewhere in the middle. So obviously 20, 22 hours is significantly better than that. And you've got the standby times of up to a month and so forth, and that's all fantastic. But, you know, the PC is kind of a legacy world, and we have all these legacy apps, and this is something Microsoft is trying to escape with Windows 10S, obviously. But it's a tough, you know, it's tough with people letting go of the past. I mean, what have you seen from a performance perspective, right? And I guess there are two sides to that. There's just the basic system performance. You're running Windows and the apps that come with Windows, the apps that come from the store, and then also the emulation experience, you know, for x86 apps. What does that look like now, a year later?
Actually, I think we're pretty excited about what we're seeing as these devices become more commercially ready. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've been testing them for quite a while. Microsoft's been testing them for quite a while, and as well as the OEMs. So there's, like, I think you can kind of segment performance into different buckets.
Yeah.
And we really look at performance from a user perspective, not a synthetic benchmark perspective, right? I mean, look, I played the synthetic benchmark game for 4.5 years because I led product marketing for the PC business at Intel. So I get how the game is played. But it is all about experiences at the end of the day, and how the user who's going to either purchase this or get it, you know, eventually in the long term from hopefully from their IT department at work, is what is that user experience. And so from a performance perspective, I heard you mention earlier about 10S. We all know what Microsoft is doing with 10S and why they're doing that, right? They want 10S to be like iOS, macOS, right? We all get it. And it's going to be a journey that they're on. And creating the universal app store, making it more secure, all that delivers benefits, obviously, to the end user. Mm-hmm. And so that's good. There's goodness there. And obviously that universal sort of Windows experience is no, you know, there's absolutely no issue with that from a platform perspective. And as far as what the OEMs ship with these devices, again, that's something that they negotiate with Microsoft. Obviously, there's costs associated with the different OS levels at Microsoft. That's something that they negotiate with the OEMs. 10S absolutely, obviously gives BOM cost relief to the OEMs because it is a cheaper form of Windows. But as you, I think, mentioned earlier too, Paul, all these devices can be upgraded for free to 10 Pro pretty much through the end of the year of 2018. So whatever the user wants to do, if it ships with 10S and they want to upgrade to Pro, they can do that. If they want to try 10S and see if that serves their needs and have no need to upgrade to Pro, so be it. So that's kind of how that's rolling itself through. As far as performance goes, there's the emulation layer you guys were talking about earlier. And, you know, that's really kind of what Microsoft is doing with their software. We really don't play a huge part in that. But what we're seeing as far as upgrading to Pro and using different applications, most of the sort of legacy applications or applications that people might have a question about tend to lie in the gaming space. Yeah. A lot of them tend to lie in the gaming space, especially the AAA gaming space. I think 90% of some of the 64-bit apps are gaming apps. But things like Chrome and other popular applications, we are working really closely with Microsoft to make sure that those are working properly and they're optimized. When a user upgrades to Pro and let's say they download Chrome for the first time, you'll see probably a couple millisecond or maybe even a half a second difference when it first loads. But then as you use it, you'll use it normally like you would anything else. And even though on a benchmark, you could say this device is 50% slower in, you know, downloading Chrome or loading Chrome than an x86 device, that could mean a half a second. And yeah, you can play the percentage game, but is a user really going to notice the difference? So that's what we're going to see, right? We're going to get these devices out there. We're going to get people using them. And we'll see what the response is and if they have a huge issue with this app or that app. And I know that there are some people that have apps that they have to absolutely use for whether it's for work or for school or for something that they do from a productivity standpoint. And I know that Microsoft, as well as ourselves, are trying to make sure that the top 100 apps, at least, that have been legacy apps work as seamlessly as possible on these devices so that the user doesn't see a huge difference in performance.
Okay. So this is almost like a backwards compatibility thing on Xbox where they can kind of tailor it on an app by app basis or whatever.
In a right. And you know, they've done the math. You know, you want to cover 90% of all the people, right? There's going to be the outliers, and the outliers are going to be the outliers. And eventually I think those apps will get there. Microsoft has made a huge push to get more and more of the ecosystem into the store. I think you mentioned earlier some applications that I think you'll see actually come into the store before these devices launch, and that ecosystem keeps growing. So I think that's also a positive move, again, so that the user may not even feel like they need to upgrade to Pro, especially when it comes to things like music and other things. So we'll see.
Interesting. You guys, do you
what
have
about,
anything?
Visual Studio running on this?
If specifically Visual Studio, I can't tell you for sure. If it's one of the top 100 x86 or x64-bit apps, then it will be covered, and we will make sure it's compatible. If it's an outlier, then it may take longer.
Yeah,
you know,
that's obviously a power user.
Right, it is. I don't know if a Visual Studio user would probably be buying one of these devices.
Yeah,
and may need a
it's
more.
It's funny. A lot of
machine.
People asked yesterday. A lot of people were asking me about that one for some reason. So,
I mean, one of the things that's interesting about the two devices we know about is that, you know, when you go back to the original 10S launch and you look, there was a Surface laptop, which was a great device, and then a bunch of education devices, which were very low end. I mean, these are not very low end devices. These are nice. You know, that's, and I think this is kind of, you know, 10S, I'm, you know, half unsold on it, obviously, but one thing it really needs is good hardware, right? And so at least these things aren't, they're not, you know, low end kind of education devices. They're for, you know, I almost said IT pros. They're for, you know, mainstream business users or whatever, mainstream consumers as well. They look nice. Let me see what else. I have other questions about this, but not all of them are appropriate for you. I don't want you to defend Terry Myerson, for example, but why don't you try? No. I do have a Terry Myerson question, but not for you. No, I do too. I love Terry.
Can I throw a question in?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So we kind of touched on this earlier, but why, I'm curious why Qualcomm and Microsoft, I guess it's half a Microsoft question, half a Qualcomm, but why go to market first with 835 based devices when you guys are there at your conference talking about 845? I mean, I don't think most consumers will know the difference, but it's still, people are asking that too. Like, why would I buy this when I know 845 is coming, right?
Yeah, great question. This really goes back to the innovation cycle, the legacy innovation cycle of the PC industry and the innovation cycle of the mobile industry. The legacy innovation cycle of the PC industry, as you probably all well know from a silicon perspective, is slow. The cadence on introducing new sort of process nodes, new processors, new platforms is a heck of a lot slower than it is in the mobile space. We have been on the cadence to introduce an all new platform on an annual basis, sometimes on a semi-annual basis, which is much faster than the PC ecosystem has been upgrading from a silicon perspective. So there's going to be a little bit of a transitional period as we bring these devices to market. We talked about this with Microsoft. We are rolling this program out in waves. We are in wave one, as we like to call it, but this is a long-term journey. I think what we are going to work towards is a more symbiotic inflection point as far as how we overlay our timing of our innovation cycle with Windows and RS3, RS4, RS5, as well as with the OEM ecosystem who wants to bring these devices to market. It's going to be a little bit strange at first because we're going to have this transition period. I think once we get into wave two, you'll see sort of a catch up And going forward, you'll see us sync our innovation cycle more with Microsoft and the OEMs so that these PC type devices, mobile PC type devices, will be on a similar innovation cycle as the smartphones that a lot of these OEMs, both the current ones as well as future ones, will be also delivering on our next generation platforms. In fact, a lot of the OEMs that we've been talking to that you'll see coming out for wave two have already said, we want to get these two things on the same cycle. So if we introduce a smartphone based on 845, we want to introduce a PC based on 845 almost at the same time. So so we're not there yet, obviously. In this first round, in order to get these first three devices out the door, we had to choose 835. 845 was based on, you know, Redstone 3 and all the things that had to go into it. 845 just wasn't ready. But I think going forward, you'll see probably us get closer with this next generation, and then by the whatever we're announcing, hopefully in Hawaii next year, because I think everybody unanimously agrees this is a great place to do it.
If I get a vote.
Reykjavik. But that you'll see a closer alignment there, and you'll see, okay, this makes more sense, right? They're announcing Snapdragon X, and all the OEMs are lined up, the ecosystem's lined up. We know it's going to launch on Redstone X, right? And it's going to upgrade to Redstone Y. All those things will make more sense, I think, as we move into like the next wave of this. And I think by wave three is when you'll see actually full alignment.
Yeah.
But it's going to take some time to get the innovation cycles to mesh. These, especially these traditional PC OEMs, they're not used to the quickness that we have in our in the mobile ecosystem on revving these devices and getting them out the door. Some of the more mobile first OEMs, Asus obviously is familiar with it because they build all their smartphones based on Snapdragon, so they understand it. New OEMs that come into this, more mobile first OEMs, will completely get it, and by the way, have asked us to close that gap as fast as we possibly can with Microsoft. So great question. And I think it's just going to be, we're in this sort of transition time. We had to make a call. And so we made it to get these devices to market as a starting point, go with 835, and let's try to align the cycles more closely as we move into wave two and three. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next question.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking about the schedule. I mean, it seems like it can work. You know, most big mobile announcements tend to come toward the beginning of the year, Mobile World Congress and so forth. Most big PC announcements seem to come toward the beginning of the year, typically at CES. I mean, you know, I'm not probing, but I mean, I expect we'll see some more action at CES, obviously. That will be interesting. I learned today, I haven't been able to dive into this. It happened right before I got on the show, but the version of the 835 that you're using for PCs is different in some ways from the mobile. Can you speak to that at all? What's happening there?
It is. It's got a different part number. I mean, it's still 835. It's got a moniker next to it. I think it's PC or something like that. But we have increased the performance from a gigahertz perspective. So it's a 2.6 gigahertz part.
Yep.
Versus the first mobile 835 part that we announced a year ago. Remember, we announced 835 before we announced with Terry Myerson at WinHack that we were doing this partnership. So there was some catch up to be done.
Right.
And as we made this decision to go with 835, we looked at it from an architectural perspective and we said, okay, what enhancements will we need to make and what could we make to make it more aligned with these devices? And that's one of the decisions that we did make. So we boosted performance. And so it's a higher gigahertz perspective. I think you'll see in the future that we will move to more of a tiering methodology as we expand the group of devices that our premium tier platform lands in. We've already got smartphones, XR, you know, standalone HMDs, PCs, automotive, etc. I think you'll see us, in some ways it will be more complex, but in some ways it'll be clearer that we're going to move towards a tiering structure, even within our premium platform.
Different variants of the same core,
right? Because we have 2, 4, 6, and 8 today, and it's kind of clear, and we get that, you know. But within 8 is where we haven't had to tier before. But I think we're going to move in that direction. So you're going to see us take our premium tier platform and actually provide tiers, and then you'll see those tiers land in different types of devices depending on the architecture that it needs to be able to deliver a great experience, whether it's an HMD, a PC, an automotive infotainment system, you know, whatever that might be.
Okay. The other one, this maybe is not the right question for you, but you said something earlier that suggested this might be the case, which is that right now we're seeing Windows 10S on these first couple of PCs. Is at least possible that over the next year or whatever, that other PC makers or the same PC makers will bring other devices to market that actually ship out of the box with something other than Windows 10S, Windows 10 Pro or whatever? Or is that
Is this their call? You know, we've stayed out of that conversation for the most part, because it is really a conversation between Microsoft and the OEMs. And for the OEMs, a part of it's BOM, right? Part of it's their cost structure, based on the price point they want to bring some of these devices to market in. And part of it is, you know, a part of it is what is the best experience to preload onto the device. I think what you'll see is more diversification of the type of Windows. And again, this I don't claim to understand how Microsoft wants 10S to permeate and how broadly they want it to permeate in the future.
Very, very broadly.
But I'm sure they want it to permeate broader than it is today, clearly. But, you know, we talked about enterprise as a second sort of wave of a target audience. I mean, Cristiano talked about it. Terry talked about it in his comments yesterday. Once we get there, let's say wave two, wave three, I think we'll have to look at that. I think I think some of these devices will have to ship with more of an enterprise focused SKU of Windows, and so we'll have to make sure that we calibrate for that. I mean, you know, this first wave again, it was they could launch with Pro or they could launch with S, and I think Microsoft's preference was S, and I think the OEMs were like, well, you know, it's our first device and we want to make sure we get it at a good price point and all these factors. You know, obviously our platform helps them do that, but also, hey, if we can get costs down, keep them under control, deliver these at good price points, that's a winner. And with Microsoft extending the free trial or the free upgrade, because understanding they have a lot of work to do on the adoption curve for 10S, I think it all worked for everybody, and everybody kind of agreed that it was the right thing to do. But I think you'll definitely see a diversification, I think, in the future as we learn more and as we start delivering different tiers of devices.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
And how about you're going to put wireless in all of these, right? So we have gigabit wireless in all our new laptops.
Correct.
That's exciting.
Yeah, so because the Snapdragon mobile platform has an integrated modem in it.
Right.
So these will start first with our X16 integrated modem in the 835 platform. And then in wave two, it'll be our X20, which is integrated on 845. So up to gigabit speeds for wave one and multi-gigabit speeds for wave two. Also, remember, on top of that, we have our 1180 Wi-Fi as integrated onto our platform. So that's going to actually make the Wi-Fi experience pretty cool as far as multi-gigabit Wi-Fi.
How is that different from what we're doing now?
Well, everything on an x86 platform is discrete.
Right.
Right. So,
is it faster because it's on chip?
It's faster because it's a better part.
well, I knew you'd say that.
I've been waiting all week to hear someone from Qualcomm.
Yeah, but it's more compact and more efficient.
Yeah,
right.
And one of the things we talked about battery life a little bit, and yes, the battery life is beyond our wildest dreams as we started actually started testing these things, and you saw a little bit in the video yesterday where, you know, 22 plus hours and still going. The thermal efficiency of Snapdragon is amazing, and that comes from our roots in the smartphone, right? You have to make a thermally efficient part for these smaller devices. That thermal efficiency with more real estate is a pretty awesome thing, right? If you're talking about putting in a bigger device.
There are compound benefits to it, right? These devices are both fanless and silent, and fanless, that kind of feeds on the battery life as well.
Right. So the benefits are like in a couple different areas. There's, hey, thinner, lighter, more creativity on the design side. And I think you'll see that even in wave two. I think you'll see, you know, these first three devices look more like traditional 2-in-1 detachable convertibles. But I think you're going to see some real creative designing going on in wave two and three.
Sure.
So there's that size, and, you know, with the board being up to 50% smaller, right, that leaves creativity for not only form factor, but also bigger batteries. So that's part of the battery life story. But the other part is really the thermal efficiency of the Snapdragon platform, which enables things like the standby time, the 30 days of standby. It also creates this instant on environment, and it creates the ability for apps and things to be happening in the background, and you're not sacrificing battery life. I mean, hibernation is there to preserve battery life today. So true connected standby really is only going to exist on these platforms, because that the whole vision or dream of connected standby is really that even if you close your laptop or you close your computer screen or your screen goes dark, it's still doing stuff in the background. And in a traditional platform of today, that you, that burns battery. And so that's an inconvenience for a user who kind of goes away and then comes back and opens up their device and they've got 5% battery left because things were syncing in the background. Microsoft was doing an update with it, right? With our big little architecture, we can actually optimize for things like that to be happening on the little cores, right? Versus the big cores, and we can preserve
battery. Cores and what efficiency cores you call them, right? Is that right?
Yeah. So the big little architecture actually helps from that, from an optimization standpoint, to be able to take care of those, you know, utility tasks that need to happen in the background. They can happen on the little cores, but then preserving battery life, obviously, and the real big workloads will be obviously handled by the big core. So that whole architecture and how efficient it is it's pretty amazing when you put it in a bigger form factor and you sort of optimize it. It really kind of helps us tell this battery life and days of use and, you know, kind of story that you've been hearing about.
Mary Jo and I were just talking about this Resume instant standby stuff this morning, and you know, the PC world, Microsoft has been working toward this for a long time, but the truth is a lot of PC makers have just given up on it because it doesn't work very well, and you see a lot of brand new PCs that ship out of the, you know, factory without that even enabled.
It one thing work. That this does though is there's almost a convergence between mobile and desktop. There will be less of a distinction between what mobile can do and what desktop can do. I mean, it's just the operating system at this point.
Right. That's why we like to say it's the best of the smartphone brought to your PC, right? Because all those experience, you don't expect your smartphone to be dead or dormant when you're sitting on the table, right? Things are still happening. Right. Yeah. And you don't want that on your PC, but that's the reality of the situation today. And Paul's comment's correct. I mean, in order for a lot of these OEMs to be able to claim 10 hours, up to 10 hours of battery life on their spec sheet,
right,
you know, they have to be able to, I guess, at least deliver 5. If they try to deliver that connected standby experience, they all know their battery life is just going to be hugely impacted by that, and they're not going to even get close to what they're claiming.
Let me take a little break right now. I don't know, Paul. Do you want to keep Don around or?
Do you want to talk 845?
It's up to you. Yeah, I think we need to do that. So let me just
take a
break.
Let's talk a little bit about the 845.
Paul, we lose the room in half an hour, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we're going to keep moving here and
we can always squat.
We could just take the microphones down to the beach. It'd be fine with me.
That's right.
I wouldn't mind that. We're talking with Don McGuire. He is what's your title, Don?
I'm the Vice President of Global Product Marketing at Qualcomm.
Holy cow. It's good job. Formerly at Intel though. I think that's interesting. There's a story there.
Formerly at Intel is going to be all of our stories.
Yeah, it might be. That might be a trend. Our show today, Brian, we'll have more in just a bit from Maui and Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott. And Ryan Shrout coming up in just a little bit from This Week in Computer Hardware and PC Perspective. But first, a word from WordPress, our sponsor for this portion of the Windows Weekly Show. And I'm proud to say, my host. Actually, I've used WordPress since the early 2000s. Not always my host. I hosted my own WordPress install, as many do. But I'm really glad I moved to WordPress.com. First of all, it saves me money. It's actually less expensive for me to let them do the hosting. And it's a heck of a lot easier because WordPress keeps it up to date, keeps the plugins up to date, keeps it running smoothly. And if I have a problem, I have someone I can call, those great WordPress support people. They are eager to help you. And they're there 24/7. I texted them at 2 in the morning. I kid you not, this morning, with a question. And they were there. I love it. Monday through Friday, 24 hours a day, and weekends too. WordPress.com. You know, 29% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. It is a dominant platform. And that means WordPress works with all your tools. We just got on the Mac. I just got the new Mars Edit 4 just came out. Thank you, Daniel. Works with WordPress. Of course it does. The WordPress API is practically a standard. But I may be getting too geeky for you, because I know one of the things that's happening is a lot of people, business owners, say, well, I'm on the internet. I've got a Facebook page. I've got a Twitter account. And I want to tell you, that is not it. You need your own website, a website you control, you manage, a website that can't be shut down, can't be taken away, can't be hijacked. That's WordPress. And you probably haven't done this because you say, it's too technical for me to. No, it's easy peasy. You go to WordPress.com. They walk you through the entire process from start to finish. It's easier than you think because you're not really doing anything. You pick a template. Now you start putting in content and you're done. You get built-in search engine optimization. You get built-in social sharing. You don't have to do anything. And I like social sharing. That means your customers, when they come to your site, they help promote your business by sharing your content, your site, on their Facebook page, on their Twitter, on their LinkedIn. That's fantastic. Hundreds of plugins, hundreds of themes. You're going to have a site that looks great, that matches your aesthetic, that runs smoothly, that's always secure. And plans start at just $4 a month. Get started today. Actually, you can save a lot if you go to wordpress.com/windows. 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to wordpress.com/windows. Create your website. Find the plan that's right for you. wordpress.com/windows. Go see leolaporte.com. That's my site on WordPress. I love it. 15% off your brand new website right now. And we, of course, thank WordPress for their support. We are in Maui. Well, we aren't. They are. Mary Jo and I are here. I'm not jealous or anything. Paul Thurrott is at Qualcomm's Snapdragon Tech Summit.
You wouldn't like it here. It's
no, I hate
sunny.
It.
It's awful.
Yeah, the beach.
It's warm and beautiful.
Actually, you're staying at my favorite hotel in Wailea. It's a beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful, the Westin there.
It's not terrible.
It's not terrible. Our guest for this portion, Don McGuire, he's VP of Global Product Marketing at Qualcomm. And besides WOA, Windows on ARM.
I guess there was other stuff.
There was some other stuff.
We prefer to say WOS, Windows on Snapdragon.
Oh. Well, that's an even more felicitous acronym. And when it's Snapdragon, all our flagship phones are using 835s. But the 845 was announced. Tell us what's new in the 845, Donna. It's a new kind of a new focus, it sounds like, for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the things that we always do with our premium tier platforms is we obviously look at trends and technology and where they're heading, and we try to do is enhance. Not only from an experiential level, but from a technology perspective, those parts of our platform that actually have to be enhanced in order to deliver what the ecosystem wants. And so the areas of focus for 845 are really around a couple different things. One is AI, and the AI and machine learning capabilities of our platform, as well as immersion. Deeper immersion, and some of that comes from the camera and the visual processing, but some other things, which are kind of new focus areas while maintaining our constant focus on power efficiency and thermals, industry-leading connectivity, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But if you saw Keith's presentation this morning, or if you saw the press kit and the release that went out, really immersion and AI are sort of the two pillars that we talked a lot about today, and that we introduced whole new architectures onto the platform to deliver more for AI and more immersion. So those are the two main areas, and we can talk about them specifically, or I can talk to you about AI versus immersion and whatever you guys want to know more about. I'm happy to address a little bit deeper.
I'm not sure if the event I know it wasn't streamed, right? So I don't know if people can. Yeah, so I'm not sure if they'll make it. If you'll make it available later, I guess you will. Okay, so people will be able to go and see it. It's worth watching because there's a bunch of stuff there. But like you said, you know, the AI stuff is, you know, bringing the AI down to the what Microsoft would probably call the intelligent edge, or the the last connected device, right, for low latency and that kind of thing. Super important for lots of things on the phone. But to me, like maybe the most impressive part was the image processing stuff. You know, that was super important. I like a lot of people really look to the cameras on the phones as kind of the number one concern, And there's some neat stuff going on there, but it's not, and it's not just for photos, although that's a big part of it. It's also for the, you know, the AI plus image processing for, you know, security and biometrics and all that kind of stuff. It's really, really impressive. I mean, you need to go watch the presentation. It's worth seeing.
Are all of those things in 845 going to be used by PCs?
They can be leveraged. Again, if a PC wants to, HP talked about they have the first front-facing camera in their device that they're launching on 835. They are leveraging our Spectra ISP for that.
Yep.
And then the future, as we see these devices take on different form factors, foldable, bendable, you know, origami, whatever they might be, I think you'll see leveraging more and more and more of the platform. All the AI stuff and the image processing, again, if you want to put dual cameras, multiple cameras, forward-facing, backward-facing cameras into these devices, absolutely the entire platform can be leveraged. There's no reason why it could not be leveraged. So,
interesting. They actually called out the PC in a few instances today. Well,
interesting question from the chat room. I mean, the value proposition really happens when you're mobile, when you're lightweight, when you're on battery. Will we see Snapdragons in desktop computers? Is there even a market for desktops anymore? I don't know.
I'm not sure. I guess it all comes down to what is the use case, right? What do people want to do and those experiences that are required? And then what's the right form factor for that? And then, you know, what is the underlying architecture that supports that? Desktops obviously are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. From a mainstream PC TAM perspective, there's obviously very, very specific use cases for desktop computing, whether it's creation and in the entertainment world, whether it's AAA gaming, those types of things. I think what you will see is, at least at first, and this kind of goes back to the announcement we made with AMD, which when Kevin Lunsing from AMD came on stage, the murmurs in the audience were not wasted on me. I was backstage and I even heard it. Yep. So it was a little bit of a surprise and a little bit of a twist, and we expected it to be the case. But the point that we were making is that, you know, the always connected PC is a movement, it's a category, and everybody believes in it, right? Everyone believes that this always connected experience is really not just a niche experience for one type of device in the PC ecosystem, but it's really sort of something that has to permeate the PC experience. So with AMD, you know, what we're planning on doing, as you probably saw, is their, you know, with their new Ryzen platform, as well as their Vega graphics, going into higher end computing, whether it's gaming types of devices that are also becoming, you know, more portable, gigabit LTE connectivity could actually be a benefit to those experiences as well. And so if you're talking about a 15 watt system, right, where we don't play in the 15 watt space, right, with our integrated platform, we play in the 5 watt space, right? Where all that battery life and that mobility and that smartphone like experience really is needed in a top tier Alienware mobile gaming or gaming PC, whether it's a gaming laptop or whatever, connectivity obviously could be a nice benefit. And that's what AMD sees, I think.
As a co-processor.
Yeah, well, as a discrete modem.
Discrete modem.
Right.
Yeah.
So you will see with the announcement they made with AMD is marrying their 15 watt sort of GPU CPU combination with our discrete Snapdragon modem. Right. To deliver a connected experience for that use case. So it's a gamer who's just addicted to gaming and wants to be able to game everywhere and doesn't want to be constricted by a Wi-Fi experience.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's a particular advantage because a lot of Intel based systems would have
the connected PCs today that are discreetly connected are connected with Qualcomm modems today. Right? 99% of the connected PCs today are connected with Qualcomm modems, even if they're x86 machines.
Yeah.
They're using our discrete modem, whether they're using our module, our M2 module. We've been doing connected PCs from a discrete perspective for 10 years with the PC ecosystem. So it's not something that we don't know how to do. And I think, you know, I think it's a great sort of little bit of a tiering differentiation with AMD and what we're going to do with them there versus what we're doing with our integrated platform. So,
Paul, I want to help you with time management because we have 15 minutes in that room. That's and right. I know you want Ryan in there. Do you want to move on or?
Yeah, let's.
I do not want to take time away from Ryan.
But, well, Don, frankly, I would. I don't. Yeah, I don't have a problem. But it's been great. It's really been great having you on. It's nice to hear directly
from
you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been my pleasure.
Really, really interesting.
Nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you, Don. Thank you. Don McGuire, VP. Global Product Marketing at Qualcomm. We'll get you, let you guys get reset. I'll do a take a break and while you're doing that. How about that? And we will move on with Windows Weekly, our special edition. We're triple headed today. Mary Jo's in New York. I'm in California, and we're in Maui. Paul has the. I'm sorry, Paul's got the tough duty at the Snapdragon conference going on right now, the Qualcomm Snapdragon Tech Summit. Ryan Schrapp from PC Perspective and This Week in Computer Hardware joins us in just a moment. But before we do that, let me mention our sponsor for this section, Rocket Mortgage. If it's time to get a home loan, if it's time to refi, it's time to visit rocketmortgage.com/windows. Rocket Mortgage is from Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction year after year. But that one of the things that makes them the best is they think about you. They think about the customer first. And they realized that the mortgage experience really wasn't keeping up with the 21st century. It was dated. It was primitive. It was slow. And they decided on a client-focused technological revolution. Rocket Mortgage was born. With Rocket Mortgage, you know exactly what's going on every step of the way. It happens fast and it's easy. You don't have to go collect paperwork. They do it all for you, and they do it so fast and easy, you can do it on your phone at an open house and get loan approval before you leave within minutes. It's simple. You'll understand every detail. You'll be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. And whether you're buying your first or your 10th home, Rocket Mortgage makes it the easiest you've ever had. Do it all in seconds based on income, assets, and credit. All you have to do is give them some basic information. They have trusted financial relationships with all the financial institutions, so they can get all the other information they need. They pull it, they check it, crunch the numbers, and then they offer a home loan right for you. You choose the term, the down payment, the rate, and they give you the approval, and you're good to go. Whether you're refinancing or you're applying for a new house, buying a new house, Rocket Mortgage on Quicken Loans is the way to go. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. rocketmortgage.com/windows, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage for their support. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Bookmark it. Or you know what? Start the process. Just get the account open. Get ready to go so you'll be ready when the time comes. RocketMortgage.com/windows. Are you guys on the beach? Or just overlooking the beach?
Our minds are on the beach.
Yeah.
I'm staring out at the beach.
Oh, yep. Man.
So there is that, right?
This is
staring at Brad.
Good as... he's a bit... Well, never mind. So welcome, Ryan Schrapp, PC Perspective.
Brad's gonna slide in like he does. There
he is. Let me slide him in from the other side. All right.
Yep.
Dueling Brad.
What do we call it? Brad sandwich.
No, don't call it that. I think I saw that on Urban Dictionary. It's not what you think.
Not very filling.
All right, Ryan. What do you think? Snapdragon 845.
Snapdragon 845 looks really good. Don was out here, talked about it. You know, I'm a hardware guy, right? I come from it from that perspective. So I'm really looking at, you know, their claims of 30% better GPU performance, 30% better CPU performance. Those are not small margins from a single generation. But I'm also a little bit curious.
They're much better than Intel's been doing generation to generation. That's for sure.
Right. Right. But they didn't show any performance metrics to back it up. Right. So they didn't show any traditional benchmarks. They didn't show any kind of comparisons to competing parts or even really any like no graphs. There were no graphs in the presentation. I'm sure that was an intentional decision they made.
I think Don set the stage for what the argument's going to be. Yes, it's numerically, it's benchmark slower, but you won't notice the difference and the other benefits will outweigh that. Right. I mean, that's what they're going to say.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting decision point for consumers to make, right? Because there is going to be a performance difference. Whether or not you can see it in the workloads that you deal with is obviously one question, but there will be a difference for some people. If you do Photoshop, if you're doing any kind of even basic video editing, there's going to be a question of whether or not this is enough horsepower for you.
Right.
But for somebody like me, where when I'm on the road, I'm not doing video editing in my machine, but I am doing some kind of basic photo editing, and I'm uploading stories, and I'm doing more intense productivity, I guess. Am I willing to trade the battery life benefits that they offer for those performance hits? And I think my inclination is yes, but that's going to be a personal decision. But for like smartphones, for me, for laptops, it's always been battery life.
That's interesting, because actually I think both days there was a point in the keynotes where they mentioned that something along the lines of battery life being the number one concern that they hear from customers, and that's true across laptops and phones.
Yeah, but what's interesting is until Qualcomm came in and started doing this, there wasn't anybody that really acted on it. You know, right. Like mobile phone providers have always done that, but then they were always, hey, 8 hours is fine. Like, we're going to make it a little bit thinner. We're going to add a little bit another, more feature set to it. But everybody seems to be pretty – they haven't stopped buying our devices, right? So clearly they're not that upset about battery life.
So Intel's going to survive with the enthusiast and pro market, obviously. But is this a Intel's seen this coming for a while. They've never been able to – the scale was a failure. They've never been able to hit this mobile market. And now this mobile market's encroaching on their laptop market. This has to be a huge threat for them.
Yeah, for sure. And if you look at their technology roadmaps, they don't really have anything on it that scales down to this power level for at least a year, right? It does give Qualcomm, I don't want to say a head start, but some competitive advantage of they're going to be able to push this in a way that nobody could. I don't know if you guys talked about it at all, but the connected standby thing, and Microsoft has not defined what that meant. And I think the reason they haven't defined what that actually means, like what the specifications are, right, that you have to meet to hit it, is because Intel can't do it yet. And they don't want to make a spec that Intel can't meet, because Qualcomm makes this amazing product, like they still have to work with Intel. They're still the largest provider of processors for notebooks, and they will be for the foreseeable future. So, I think we have this vague cloud around that term because not everybody can meet it, and Intel's probably like, hey, could you maybe not create a spec that we absolutely cannot meet
in
12 to 18 months?
They're talking about modern standby now instead of connected standby, right? Like that's the new thing that everybody's starting to talk about.
But I just don't know what that means.
Yeah, what is modern? Me neither. What is modern standby?
Well, it's obviously newer than the other one.
It's very 21st century.
Yeah.
Well, Apple's probably going to – I wonder, now that Microsoft's going to Windows on ARM, Apple clearly has been thinking about this. They've got these A11 chips, these very, very fast ARM-based. They're not Qualcomm, but they're ARM architecture.
But are ARM-based,
I would imagine Intel's looking over at Apple saying, guys, please.
Well, it is interesting. Intel has ruled the hardware side of the PC industry for eternity. And, now that the PC has been kind of relegated to the smallest of the big digital platforms, and Qualcomm is coming in and taking it, potentially trying to take the mainstream part of this thing. It's like we're getting down to some kind of weird situation where what's left for these guys, and which is a weird thing to say. They're the market leader. We got to keep that in perspective.
The threat from Apple is probably more significant to Intel than the Windows one, because Apple would be the most likely entity to just say, we're done, and just go completely the other direction, or 50% or 90% in one take.
They're already trying to do that in the iPhone, and they're really trying to get those Intel modems out of – or actually, no, this is the other way around. They want to get the Qualcomm modems out of there.
Yeah.
Well, never mind. Intel's got a great modem business ahead of it.
Those guys will play – Apple will play the two companies against each other because they can and because they have to. But eventually, you get the feeling they want to be part – that they want that to be them,
And when they get there – they want to make everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll kick anyone out. No doubt about it.
So were you surprised when AMD strides on stage, Ryan?
I was, yeah.
Because they just made a deal with Intel.
Right. Well, the murmur was like, oh man, AMD is you know, are they, is there some kind of merger happening? Yeah, is there some acquisition happening? Yep. You know, obviously it was a little bit more mainstream kind of announcement than that, but it's still good, right? And I still think there were some people around me that had questions about why would Qualcomm bring somebody out who makes laptop processors, even though they are partnering with them.
Actually, I might be able to answer that question because it was a company that was not named Intel.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think they would have brought anyone out, I think, you know, for that purpose.
It did seem a little odd to say, here's our event where we're launching all the notebooks we make. Here's another guy who makes notebooks.
Well, but you know what? They're complementary. I mean, that's the thing. I don't know that they see that as a threat because that is, by comparison, kind of a niche market from a unit perspective. And they're going after the mainstream. And, of course, they just don't play in that market. I mean, and I think that's basically what he just said, you know.
We all know from looking at a roadmap that AMD will not play in their space for the foreseeable future either, right? If Intel is not going to get down there in the next year to two years, then AMD is not going to.
What about either. The Adreno graphics in this 845, Ryan? Is it are we getting to discrete graphics levels or no? We're not even close.
No, we're still not there, right? So like a 30% jump is significant, and 30% more power efficiency is even more important for these mobile devices. You know, I have seen, I don't think they showed any of this. I've seen mainstream games running on these Snapdragon devices.
Okay.
Right? So wow. Dota, League of Legends.
Oh, really?
On notebooks.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Okay.
So they can do it at, you know, 1080p or lower frame rates. You know, it's the...
Yeah, my daughter could probably fly a plane. You don't necessarily want her to.
That's true. Can it run Crysis? That's what we all want to know.
Definitely not.
No,
yeah.
No.
But it's pretty good. But it's not going to take over AMD's space or NVIDIA's space anytime soon, right? Like for these devices, MX150, what's in here? Is there a discrete GPU in here?
Yeah, it's a 1050.
Yeah, 1050. That's a huge leap.
You're never
above
gonna hit that. Yeah.
What Adreno is.
Yeah.
But they're just targeting different things, right? That 1050 uses 40 times the power.
Oh yeah.
That so
they had to make this thing bigger just to house the heating, you know, the suspension.
So in a way, what we're really seeing is a fragmentation of the market, a slices of the market, which in the past were handled by software alone, you know, one laptop to fit it all. Now we're really seeing some real distinction between different hardware platforms.
We're going to see what really matters to people here. I think that's the most interesting thing. You know, they talk about battery life. I think it's real. You think it's real. And I've talked about this. You know, PC makers have kind of tried to find these niche markets that can be successful, premium PCs, gaming PCs, and so forth. But from a unit perspective, those things aren't very big for a company like Qualcomm to kind of come in and say, you know, we're grabbing at what I think is the mainstream big part of the market. It's not just it's not finding a niche that's successful. It's finding the mainstream big part of the market and trying to be successful with it.
Intel struggles because they have to develop for everybody for everything, right? From the 18 core desktop parts to servers to notebooks. They tried to do mobile space, right? And as it turns out, that's really, really hard to do, or maybe impossible. If Intel could do it, I lean towards nobody being able to address all these markets very effectively. But if you're Intel, you're getting attacked in all these different areas, right? AMD's coming at you in server space and desktop space. Qualcomm's coming at you here. It's tough, right? I imagine they're having some difficult engineering conversations over the next several months.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Intel has the same issue on the hardware side that Microsoft does on the software side, and for the same reasons. They've tried to be everything to everybody.
It's yet to be. I mean, I think we're taking for granted that people want more battery life, but...
Well, that's what I mean. That's the question. We're going to find out.
Even though most people these would be plenty fast for, enough for, people are funny. I hear people all the time say, well, it's just too slow, as if it's going to make any difference to them. They're just, but they're aware of the benchmarks. They're aware of and psychologically, that hits them.
Well, and that's why this is such an interesting thing. I mean, we're going to find out, you know, if you ever watch House Hunters, you know, the people look at three houses and they pretend they have these different things, and then you get to the end and you find out what they really want.
Right. People don't really know what they want, do they?
That's right. We're going to find out what people want. And I think that's what's really interesting here, because everyone has this opinion, well, I could never run that, or, you know, I need this or whatever. And, you know, we're going to find out.
Yeah.
Is there a price advantage? I mean, these don't seem much less expensive.
Yeah, I think that there is still.
I kind of don't feel there's a big price advantage, right? So I think like in general, the 4 gig models are $599. The 8 gig models are $799. You can get a lot of Intel notebooks for $799.
Yeah, that seems pretty. Right? That almost seems pricey. That almost seems pricey for what
we're doing. I think it's more than some people were expecting, right?
But I think that's important because I one of the things I think that really got Windows 10 S off to a bad start was these real lowball education type pieces. I really do. I just feel like they just tripped right out of the gate. I mean, I think hitting in the middle of the market like this, they're saying, look, these are mainstream computers. These are you're going to want one. You know, they're not for your parents, not for your kids.
They're worth $700.
They're free. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
But do they feel like they are worth it? You guys got a little hands-on time with them. I mean, I saw some people saying the Asus one felt cheap.
I don't feel like that. Yeah. Like, I mean, they seem like standard $600 to $800 notebooks, right? So, like the HP is a convertible.
HP might be more expensive. I mean, they haven't said, but I mean, based on the pricing of the Elite X2 today, the NVX2 today, and I think they're going to rev this to the Intel version to look like this new version. I wouldn't be surprised if that came in around $1,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, that's really what you're coming down to. Is your question of are they too expensive comes down to, does a consumer value that battery life and the connectivity mentality more than the performance, right? So if I were Intel right now, I'd be going to every media outlet and saying, here are these benchmarks. We got these devices. We're 3 times better here. We're 2 times better here. Here's the app compatibility problems that we found on their device that don't exist on ours, right? They're going to do that. They're going to do that kind of marketing tactic.
I mean, Intel has literally reached out, I think, to everyone who attended this conference to make sure that, but don't forget us, guys.
They send out a little note. Here's our thoughts.
And Qualcomm knows that's the first thing Don addressed right out of the box. You know, it's the old megahertz myth back again.
Yeah. But, look, Intel does have very real advantages still. The performance stuff is real. The compatibility is real. And the variety of devices is real. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Qualcomm also has some advantages. And this is what I mean. We're going to find out now. I mean, things matter. Different things matter to different people.
Yeah. Is it a simpler chip system to design, Ryan? Is it a bigger system on a chip? Is everything? It sounds like there's more stuff in the die.
There's more stuff in it, but it's less complex and it's a smaller die. And it's a smaller die, so it's a smaller PCB. I think it was at Mobile World Congress last year, they actually tore down like a Intel Core M notebook and showed the PCB of it and showed the PCB of Windows on Snapdragon device. And there's a significant advantage to Qualcomm there. And that flexibility, I don't think it necessarily shows in the first generation, but in theory, it gives the OEMs the ability to design things a little bit differently, a little bit thinner, or my hope is a little bit more battery in those same devices. And then the thermal differences, I think, are important as well. Intel still needs to point out when some devices are fanless, right? All of these Qualcomm devices are going to be fanless.
Yeah, so I mean, you can get a Surface Book that's fanless. Well, that's not true. You can get a Surface Book with a lid that's – never mind. Actually, no, you can't.
You lie! Like, liar!
I have an X1 Carbon here, and I love this machine, but every once in a while you wake it up from sleep and the fans kick on. And I'm like, well, that's annoying, right? Yep. And it's just one of those things. It's a bunch of stuff that is not directly measurable and displayed on a graph that Qualcomm and its partners have to convince consumers shows value, valuable to them.
And you're right. We're not going to see that yet because these are really – I'm sure they're taking existing designs and just basically putting an arm.
But
in a generation or two, you might see some really unique – I'm of two minds on that one, though,
because if you can point to two PCs that look identical and say this one performs a little better, this one gets twice the battery life, you can make a very simple decision. The one thing I'm a little nervous about with ARM-based laptop or devices is that they're going to be like electric cars where they don't look like cars. They look like goofy sci-fi experiments, and why can't they just be cars?
I know.
There's
some
aspect of that to it as well.
Actually, it's interesting because we just saw the new Nissan Leaf. We're going to have it Saturday on the new screensavers, and they've intentionally made it not weird-looking.
Right, because I think that turns off some people.
It does. I didn't want those alien eyes on the old Leaf. They really look weird, like a bug. Do you have a hard out? Do you need to get out? Or can
we do this? Yeah, we do have to get going.
All right. Well, this has been great. I have to say,
they haven't quite given us a shepherd's crook yet, but I think it's because they can't find it.
Mary Jo and I are kind of odd, you know, odd.
Mary Jo, I'm sorry for another Xbox themed Windows Weekly.
No, you know what? I actually care about, because I care a lot about battery life.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Oh, well, and I think it's a new path. It's a new way for PCs. This is a big deal, frankly,
it is.
I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I agree.
I really do. And I think this always connected PC thing, and remember, Intel's part of it, too. I mean, I think that this really is the future of the mainstream part of the PC market. This is it. And adopting mobile technologies is so obviously huge and necessary. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing. We'll see what happens. Yep.
Well, thanks to Ryan Shrout from This Week in Computer Hardware, PCPer.com. And I'm sure, Ryan, you'll be writing this thing up like crazy.
On slides to get in my email box now.
Yeah, you got a ton of stuff to talk about. Yep. But thank you for being here. Thanks, too, to Don McGuire of Qualcomm. Paul, thanks for lining this up and making it happen.
I'm going to rip off my clothes and jump in the ocean, Leo.
That's your reward. That's your reward. It's a beach day now. Enjoy the rest of your time out there in Maui. And Mary Jo Foley, of course, thank you for being in New York.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Yes, I can tell. Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com. His books are at leanpub.com. And we do Windows Weekly. Normally, it's a different time today, but we'll be back to our 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC slot on Wednesday next for another thrilling, gripping edition of Windows Weekly. Thanks, everybody. See you guys.
Bye.
Aloha.